listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake Up Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Kolula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have a very talented songwriter, Mr. Ian McCarter. How are you, man?
I am good.
You look like a hobbit wizard, dude. I'm like, I have to know more about your story, bro.
It's an interesting one, that's for sure.
That's awesome. Well, first of all, I heard from one of my former students, Allie, who you know, Allie Taylor, and she said you're one of the greatest whistlers. I heard a recording, but I want to hear the whistle live just so we can document this interview first.
You want to just stamp it with the whistle?
Stamp it with a whistle. Let's do it.
All right. Well, okay. I'll just do a little thing. So I do the melodic stuff, and then I can also do this cool little warble thing. So I'll give you a little bit of both. But yeah, it's a nice instrument to have. It's very portable, I like to say. But it's like.
Dude, that's incredible, dude.
And so I like to screw with people like, well, I'll do the little, and people like look at their phones, like in elevators and stuff. And then this is just fun to weird people out sometimes, but it's the.
They're just like.
What's going on? A bird? It's like the birds from Hitchcock or something.
That's crazy. You know what? I'm going to give you a huge compliment. I think you may be the greatest whistler I've ever heard, man. That is perfect.
It's an honor. Thank you.
Amazing. How did you learn that? I know that's not why you're on the show, but let's talk about this for a second because it is it's a novel talent.
It's gone down in my family for generations, actually. My father whistled, my grandfather whistled, and my great-grandfather apparently could do dual-tone whistling. And
what?
Play the fiddle at the same time. He was like this maniac of a musician, but he never did it for a living. He was just like this insane talent.
So it's genetic is what you're saying. You're like,
I guess the whistle runs in the blood. we're part bird.
Did somebody teach you like, okay, this is what you got to do. This is how you do it. Or you just like started doing it?
It was just like from the time I was a kid, I've always kind of had a melodic brain. And I just practice making tones, and then it's just like a little amateur where you practice intervals and note relations and tone, and it's, yeah.
Well, what's interesting, too, is, like, usually the best whistlers are horn players. Like, you know, like, it's something in the embouchure, like you said. Yeah. It's usually a flautist, you know, that can hit these crazy notes just because.
Makes total sense.
Yeah. But you have better tone than any whistler I've heard, man. Instrumentalist or not. It's awesome.
Hard earned for sure.
Amazing. Let's go way back. You've been doing some pretty amazing things and pretty heartfelt things. But, like, what was the moment of Zen that made you want to become a musician?
I don't know. I mean, really, I think it's just always been a part of me, and I've always loved it. And growing up, I had a lot of different opportunities to kind of consider and be like, oh, I can see you go down that path as a musician. And I can see you can go down that path and that path and that path. And there's just so many choices of how to apply talent, you know?
Right.
And my economic minded father was just like, hey, I'm in entertainment too. And it's up and down. So get a job that's secure. And, you know, we had a wild ride with him in the entertainment industry and film in particular. And it was tough. Sometimes we're really rocky, and I ended up becoming an RN and going to school for nursing at the same time as doing music and stuff. And I kind of went into it with an open mind. I'm like, this seems like a smart choice. I don't know exactly what I'm going to love in it besides just being able to serve in a very specific way, a very tangible way. And it's just good functional knowledge to know, right. But little did I know that that would be the gateway into everything I'm doing artistically with my entire life right now.
That's amazing. And, you know, for all of our listeners and viewers, you're doing something that it's kind of a niche. I wouldn't even say it's a market. I would say it's a niche necessity because you're playing music for medical patients that are up against these giant obstacles of really life and death or dealing with these, you know, terminal illnesses, and you're offering them music and healing, you know, and that's a tremendous tremendous sacrifice you're making, first of all. So tell us a little bit about what made you want to do this.
Well, I was familiar with traditional music therapy, and I was associated with it when I was in my clinical practices in medicine. And I would see the benefit of music being just naturally a balm for pain, or being a different context setter for something as sterile as like a deathbed. But being a songwriter, I always felt like there was more to explore there, for sure. And instead of just playing music for people, it's actually like creating music from that person and like immortalizing them in song. And the power of the simplicity in there is profound, because it's like I started in medical nursing, so I'd see traditional disease, resistance, death, and or disease, resistance, cure, go home. And there was no like embracing the story or embracing the lessons of what would come later when I found hospice, where it's like, you are going to die.
Right.
What are you going to do about it? And that was incredible to witness, because the truth that comes out in those moments where there's no need for facades anymore,
right,
is like some of the most genuine, honest, authentic humanity I've ever seen in my life, anywhere.
Well, what's really interesting too, it's like you're dealing with one of those like pivotal moments, probably yeah. the most pivotal moment outside of being born, you know, yeah, like, absolutely. You know, everything is about that exit, and most people take for granted what they think they would want in those moments. Mm-hmm. And you're creating kind of like a sonic message or therapy that I think is tremendous. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go on what you were saying.
No, that's exactly it. And it comes from observing kind of the meaninglessness that can come from an end if there's no transformation, or if there's no purpose derived from it, or a continuing on through something else. And, you know, that's essentially what is most satisfying at the end of a life, is when people can be of service. They feel like they've contributed. And through this tragedy of the end, or the great mystery of their next step, that tragedy can take on a new meaning when something's shared. And when they're looking back on life with new eyes in ways that the rest of us spend our whole lives trying to break into, you know, like piercing that veil of seeing what really matters, they become the teacher, and they become the wisest of us all. And as an artist, I can sit there, and what I do, I sit there for multiple sessions, I record them, I have this whole questionnaire of life's meaning and regrets and joys and crossroads, and I just listen to them for hours and hours and hours, and the family's usually there too. And then I go home and I crank up the songwriting process and meditate on these things, and these gems come out, and these songs just flow. They become alive and with such ease. When you're invested in that kind of context, there's like that muse is just thrilled. You know, it's usually we're trying to get out of our own way to make right. music and to be creative and open as a vessel. And this way just flips the switch and opens.
Well, how does it, are they just open, or are they not open at first?
Depends. You know? It's not for everybody. You know, it's such a novel idea that, you know, some people don't even want to go there, but some people get it. They really, really get it. And it just becomes the most beautiful. I mean, from the words of a few people that I've worked with this past year, it's the most beautiful thing that's ever happened to them.
Wow.
In those moments, to have that kind of witness and honoring while they're at their most vulnerable, it's unreal. I mean, and for them to know that something very specific to them is going to live on and reach thousands of people, and that message of what they've learned will really impact people through the power of a song. You know, it's at the click of a button, it's accessible to the entire world, to where this generation who's typically in their 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, that concept is otherworldly to them. You know, the fact that they can share something that the entire world can hear at the click of a screen. You know, they come from the days of turntables and right. telegrams in some cases. And so this is just mind-boggling and magic for them. And It really is.
It's like, you know, when you're kind of on those last legs, you kind of don't want any fluff. People in there that are just going to waste your time, or you don't want phone messages or things that you have to sort through that just none of that. You know, you want family, usually family or loved ones.
Yeah.
And, you know, I could see how music is probably the most poignant in some ways, because it says the things that maybe people can't always say to each other, you know?
So you ask them
intense specifics, or is it, you know, if you're like, oh, do you have any regrets? And they'll say, oh, maybe a couple. Like, what's a crazy answer? You don't have to tell who it is, but give me an example of, like, something that inspired a lyric or a moment.
In regards to regrets?
Yeah, or anything that you ask.
Yeah, I'd say when it comes to regrets, when people wake up too late to the whole point of living is of being of service to another. You know, when they've reaped the pains of a lifetime of self-indulgence, that's some really brutal stuff to witness.
Wow. Dude, that was enlightening just to hear that. That was like, but it's the truth. It's like,
it is.
When you give, you get the world. That's what Dave Matthews says. And I'm like, yes, it's so true, you know?
It's so true in every way.
Do you play the songs for them, like, before they go, after, for their family? Like, when is the right time?
It's always, if possible, for them before they go. That's for sure. Because then they can kind of revel in the reality of it. And, yeah, that's the magic stuff. I had one gal who, like, the context of that completely, she was, at one point, she wanted to end her life through the assisted suicide here in, you know, that whole program. And then we were like, you know, is there something we can help facilitate through this process that you want to say? And, like, you know, that can give you a voice again, because you are contained in this little house, but we are your voice. You know, I can deliver something for you. And the whole process that completely turned her around, and she was just like, I'm alive again. You know, and I, at the end of the day, when I was done with the song, I print out these lyric plaques on cherry wood with gold. And so they have the inscribed lyrics. And so they get to really feel that and hear the song at the same time. And at the end of that, she just stared at the plaque for like 5 minutes, just silent, just reading those lyrics again and again. And then eventually she just kind of snapped to and took off the earphones, and she said, this is me. I get it. This will live and I will die.
She's like,
this is everything.
That is probably the greatest gift you can give someone, dude.
And with such a joy as music, right? It's like such a no-brainer.
Do you ever find like any kind of block with writing in those moments? I mean, because it's all super potent, the information they're giving you.
Yeah. But yeah, some people write multiple songs for just because there's so much, and there might be, you know, from a writer's point of view, you know, you have to have that North Star typically when you're writing a song to have it really come through clearly. And sometimes somebody gives you like, you know, 10 awesome North Stars, and you're like, well, which one do I pick? And I spend the majority of my time not writing the song, but reviewing their notes and their content, and just like searching and picking the poetry from their stories. And I mean, that's the richness of it for me. You know, I get to really meditate so deeply on these amazing lessons and this truth, really. And then, you know, I pray a lot. You know, I really ask God to deliver me what needs to be said. And
well, it helps that you look, it helps that you look like Jesus, man.
Every little bit helps, right?
I'm just teasing. So when you're writing songs now, do you write songs outside of this process, like as an artist creatively for your own benefit? Or do you find that now that is too self-serving because of this other path that you've developed?
Well, yeah, I It's funny. I've been thinking about that a little bit recently, actually. And I wouldn't say that I feel like it's self-serving, but it's gotten to the point where it's just not as interesting anymore. Because
your dog agrees. Depth, huh? I said your dog agrees.
Yeah, I know. We got this noisy little Labrador out there. But he, like, I was just considering, like, I haven't written an original song just about whatever in so long because it's just not as deep anymore. Like, I find myself in these people, really. Like, I identify with everything I write about in them because it's all the human story. And every intense journey that they're on is symbolized poetically in me in some way, just in the arcs of our life and the little deaths and the little lives all the way to the very end. And so I haven't had a me song, just me, in years, it seemed.
It's such potent. Like I said, it's so potent what they're giving you. And also, you know, I wanted to ask, do you kind of write third person? Are you writing first person, like in their shoes?
Sometimes, depending on the context, you know, and I'll play around with it just like as a songwriter practice, you know, to have, you know, what if the song was first person? What if it was third person? You know, and sometimes one switch can completely transform the depth of the song. Like if it's about somebody, or then if you embody it as the singer, like it just completely flips it sometimes. Because we've started doing more with bereavement as well. And so we're writing for people who've lost. And that's been incredible as well in a different way. It's like, it's allowing them to journey through the grief with the symbol in hand and find that they can be of service and develop a completely new compassion because they have suffered. And then they look out and they're like, oh my gosh, look at all these other people that have suffered as I have. I can help now. And that's been beautiful for the song to kind of lead the way for them, but them to be able to do the work and to feel liberated and really witnessed and supported. So those two go hand in hand. I'd say these days I do about just as much for both. Like half of my song load is for bereavement, and then the other half is for the dying, essentially.
Well, and it's kind of like, you're kind of like a painter in this regard. It's like, mm-hmm. I assume that you make this recording, the moment is captured in the recording, yeah. And you may never replay these songs other than the listening of it. Again, like do you sit in a room later, months later, and start playing these old songs?
I make a point to do it, actually. I have a Patreon where I share all these songs, and like the clients and other people join, and they all share in the common experiences through these songs. It's really amazing. And then I do concerts now. I kind of coin them legacy concerts. And so in San Diego a couple weekends ago, I had done quite a bit of writing down there for folks in that county through the VA and privately. And I invited everybody I'd written for in the county to come to the concert. Wow. And to have them all there, you know, and having them not know each other per se, and then having their songs celebrated and them shared, and then for them to come together during the show and like after the show and to just be a part of what those songs symbolize. It was unlike any concert I've ever given.
But yeah. you're not like, this is about Joe, or do you just kind of leave it all vague?
Depending, you know, some people prefer to be more anonymous, and then other people are like, lay me out. Tell my story in any way that serves. And so I'll use names. And, you know, with their permission, and that just brings the person to the song to be like, this is about someone real, and this is right. The story and the context, and this is the message. And so it's a pretty interesting way to play and to do performance. You know, it's another way.
What about the vibe of the song? Is there like a variety and mood, or is it a lot of somber stuff that
you not know? So much. Somber is not the typical theme. Actually, it's usually inspirational and melodic.
That's amazing.
And for them, I think that's what they love. You know, they want their suffering to be acknowledged, but also growth to be found or inspiration to be found for others. You know, that's what brings them their greatest sense of meaning. They want people to listen to the songs and be like, I feel inspired, not like I want to kill myself, you know, just they want to be uplifted. And they do. It's really beautiful. Like it's
what's amazing is, you know, when I was starting out, I got an opportunity to play, to volunteer at Cedars-Sinai.
Oh, wow.
Play music for patients. And, you know, it's like, I think when I signed up, I was like, yeah, this would be something cool. Be a way to practice. It'd be a way to, like, you know, do something that's like serving and something that's for the greater good.
Right.
And I had some pretty profound experiences. Like, people would be in a coma and then they hear music and start to like respond. I was saying for like cancer patients, AIDS patients.
Mm-hmm.
There's a woman I remember walking down the hall and her back was to me the whole time. Mm-hmm. And I was just playing and playing and playing and stopped. And she was walking like maybe 3 feet in front of me. And she turned around and she was bawling. And she was like, that was so beautiful. And I can't thank you. And it was just like, it was a very weird experience to not really comprehend what was going on while I was doing it until you start seeing these experiences. So I can't imagine that you're not moved to tears constantly or just always on that feeling of like being alive. Like you probably have a lot of gratitude for life. Absolutely. As a result of all these experiences. Tell me how it's impacted you on some level, you know?
It's allowed me to familiarize myself with my own mortality. That's been a big one, you know, to engage with not the fantasy of death, but the actual reality of death. You know, in our Western culture, it's a pretty freaky thing to even talk about in general. But I've had the fortune of traveling the world quite a bit, as you have, and other cultures who are much older seem to embrace mortality to inform life. And I find that is huge. And it's the core of my philosophy for living. It's just like, we're fragile little things and life goes by so fast and it can change so fast. And there's so much beauty right here. And so much you can do right now. And there's so much you can do later, but I think our culture gets so absorbed in then or someday or like somewhere else that they miss the joy of what you can really do to live immediately. And fragility has taught me so much about that and to appreciate simple things that just flutter by every single day. And then you look back when you have to do without them. And then you're like, gosh, I wish I had more of a consciousness of that. But it's too late. And I've seen that in some people where it's just like, if I only knew how precious this is. But now I have like a month with it and then I'm gone.
Wow. That gave me chills again. Let's play something. What do you want to play us first?
What did I send you? I sent you Shadow of the Pine. Ah, okay. On that topic, it's not the... Oh, man. Yeah. This song is called Give Her Flowers Now. And this is a perfect example of you don't know what you got until it's gone type of thing.
Wow.
And I was out with my beloved woman and my mom at a jazz night. And just as things were getting started, I got a call from the hospice I was working with. And they're like, we just had someone pass. They need you right now. And so I went over there, said goodbye to the gals. And it was just like, this feeling of I'm going to learn something really special tonight. Like I just felt that. And I show up and this big family's there and I go into the room and this woman is dead in the bed. And the husband of that woman greets me and he's like, please sit down. Can we get you some pie? And can we tell you about this woman that I loved? And I was like, holy smokes. Yes, please.
You're like, what kind of pie?
Yeah, I'm like, I'll take that, whatever you got. And then, I was sitting there munching away on this pie. And then here's this woman in this bed and her husband sitting at her feet. And he's just pouring out all these stories of how much how much love they had, but if he knew how painful it would be to lose her, like, he was just completely raw with me. And he's like, if I only could get a glimpse of how much I'd miss her right now, I would have got her flowers every day. I would have shown her all the love I possibly could have squeezed out of myself. Because he's like, now what are flowers? I can just put her on a grave. You know, he's like,
wow.
There's nothing more I can do. But, you know, and I was, you know, just so blown away by how open he was with me about that. And funny enough, like, I buy flowers for my gal pretty much every day she works, and I buy her a little bouquet. And so, like, when he told me that, I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to keep doing this more and more and more. And I went home at like 3 a.m. after the mortuary showed up and everything. And he just stopped me in the walkway. And he's like, son, are you going home to your gal? I'm like, yes, I am. And he's like, just give her flowers now. And I just chills. And I'm like, man, you bet. And so just moments like that remind you of what's coming. And it's terrifying, but at the same time, it's revealing in a really powerful way that shakes you from complacency or ignorance. It wakes you up to like, this is for real. I need to really give all that I have every day because nothing is guaranteed. And this song is my homage to them. And it was great. We got to go over and I brought my gal over to them and we had dinner and then I played the song for them. And it was a really sad but beautiful moment. You know, it was like 3 months after she passed, and you know, it was really like a rough month for him, the husband in particular. But then for him to know that he inspired another to give more love, it's comforting. As painful as it is, it lives on and inspires the rest of us to do all that we can while we can. And I think those moments they're hidden from the majority of people until it's right in your face.
Right.
And to be able to have the honor to witness that, and then to be this artist that can paint these pictures for people to be like, this is coming. This is the truth. So what are you doing? Like, how are you living? You know, it's an honor, an absolute honor to do this and to make this life. And
well, let's hear it. This is Give Her Flowers Now by Ian McCarter.
Dressed in black and wrapped her in a sheet. I'm glad my daughter helped me wash her feet before you head on home back to your gal. Just remember what I said. Give her flowers now. Give her flowers now.
Wow, what an intense song, man. Really beautiful. Really beautiful.
Yeah, that's probably the most somber one that I've written.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's plenty somber.
You're like, oh boy. Yeah.
But what was it like also just, I mean, that's got to be such a vulnerable experience playing it for him.
Yeah.
What was that like? What was his reaction?
Crying. It was really intense. It was very raw. But it felt sacred to me. You know, it felt like we celebrated her and him in a way that, you know, is one of the greatest lessons of life, to give love while you can. And how they were just such a crisp example of that for the rest of us. And it was beautiful. You know, the kids were there, the cousins and stuff too. And my beloved was there. And so it was just like, holy smokes. Like, we got in the car after we had wrapped up the night, and we just both were like, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to put into words, really. I mean, to the extent of what that moment actually was.
Well, just a lot of, like, outpouring of energy and spirit and creativity, too, and also just love for life on some level, even if it's gone. It's like there's a celebration then too, you know, it's like, sure, even if it's in mourning, you're still celebrating the person on some level. Like, how do you deal with that day to day or from song to song? Like, that is heavy stuff to have to face and write from that place all the time.
Yeah. It's definitely, it's pushed me to, I guess another, no other words, like a depth of artistry that I've never had to tap before, because it's this continuous visiting of pain and seeking beauty. And so I'm grateful. I have a lot of love in my life, like my family and my woman. I mean, they just really lift me up, because it's the heaviest work I could imagine in an artistic way. But I think the nature of the work itself is hopeful. So it really fills me back up. Like it's this ringing out, and then it's this absorbing, and a ringing and an absorbing. And the service of it is so meaningful that I can't see myself doing anything else. Like, this is,
yeah, everything else becomes trivial at that point. You know?
Yeah, really. I mean, it's not like anything is, I don't want to say other ways of music are less important, but it feels like I derive the most.
Music are less important.
No, I find this is my greatest direct application of serving another with music.
Right.
And even on the artist side of things, like, I feel like now I actually really have something to say.
Right.
And something that people can really experience through music that's a whole other level from what I was doing before. You know, writing about my questions of life and all these things. And there, yeah, it was great. But, you know, it was important at the time. But now it's different.
And it's taken on a new meaning, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Does it influence you as a writer outside of this? Or is it mostly, do you find that you wear the hat to write for others for this purpose more than anything else?
For the past couple of years, that's it. That's all I've done. And so I think back to the days, because I did some film and TV stuff and, you know, other writing projects and stuff like that. And I don't know. There's just something so sacred about this kind of work that I don't hunger any other any other facet of the industry. I just feel like this is it. And if I can find ways, ideally, so that these songs can go on to serve more and more, I think that would be a wonderful motivation for exploring. You know, if an artist picked up one of these songs and shared it with even more people, like, I think that would accomplish a huge part of the intention of what the service is originally to these people who are just like, take this and use it, you know, because I'm not taking, I can't use it where I'm going, you know. It's like,
right.
It's a way for them to surrender, you know, the riches of life. You know, it's not monetary, but it's spiritual, and it's them. It's like they're giving of their literal self to live on in us while they depart. Really,
let's play something else. What do you want to play us next?
Yeah, a good one to go into would be Shadow of the Pine, and that one is perfect analogy for someone actually leaving something behind. I had this one patient. He was in his 40s. He was very young, and I went to meet him, and just a gaunt, thin man. Walked into his little garage, and he was chilling in his chair, and, you know, his family was there, and we started talking, and he just had this great sense of humor and this really kind of profound positivity about him. And I'm like, dude, where is that coming from? Like, how are you abiding in this mentality now? And you've got like a month to go. Like, literally, that was it. Like, cancer riddled from his intestines and his colon to the rest of his body. And so he was just a suffering unit on every level. And so I'm like, how are you positive right now? It's really curious. And he's like, man, I figure that this thing's coming either way. And people are around me, like my children and my aunts and my sister, and they're watching. And I have the choice to turn inward and go, woe is me, I'm dying, I'm suffering. Or I can use this as a lens to really see how I can serve them with everything that I can, while I can, even in these final moments, until the final moment. And he's like, that's what I'm leaving behind. He's like, this is the treasure that I can give. It's all that I have. And I was just, you know, to see that kind of fortitude in that context at that age,
right,
is very rare. Usually that kind of maturity I find in people like in their 60s, 70s, 80s, but not in their 40s. Like, that was really profound for me. And so I shared, I'm like, well, here's some songs that I've done for others, man. Like, this needs to be heard. And like, what you're symbolizing, like, I'd love to do this for your family. And he just, you know, was weeping about it. And he's like, this is it. Like, this is everything. I want this so bad. And so I thought of this analogy of just, he was this pillar and this, you know, this pine, essentially, in the song. Like, he was the tree in the center of the town that people would come to and lean on and like find shelter under. And, you know, they were under the shadow of his guidance, and he was a comfort and a strength. And then like, he just was struck by this cancer and was transformed into a shadow of himself. Like, he used to be this really muscular, you know, bodybuilding He-Man, and then he withered away into like 80 pounds. And wow. He was like 6 feet tall. So it was just like, he was bones. And so everyone's just like, oh my God, like, what's happening? You know, it just was so, so intense. And then, you know, once he passed away, it's just like the evidence of what brings people together, and like the gathering and the reuniting of those that loved him and choose to live out the themes that he imparted before he left, you know, the courage to carry on and the willingness to serve through pain. His family represented that. And it's like, they had the wood from the fallen tree pretty much to light the fire in the winter and to stay warm because of all that he gave in that moment. And Like now they are the shadow of the pine. Now is the fire's in the fireplace and you see their silhouettes all on the wall gathered together. Like that's him. And that's symbolized in him. And it's just like, yeah, I mean, it's all about what you can give. And he just, to that last breath, like I went and took care of him the night he died actually too.
Wow.
And the family was like, you know, they were like relieved that he wasn't suffering anymore, but they were like glowing because he was still conscious enough to give to them. And he was like doing little like low key jokes, inside jokes that only they would get till like 20 minutes before he took his last breath. It's crazy.
That's crazy. Here's Shadow of Pine by Ian McCarter.
There you go.
Would you look at that pine standing tall in the middle of the town? When it makes that shade, we all come round. Well, it sure gets hot out here between the summer and the sun. Getting so we be sweating like bullets from a gun. Well, it ain't so bad, no. We'll be doing just fine. 'Cause we got it made when we got the shade of the shadow of the pine. Now the summer's over and the lightning storm come round. It struck our boy and he come tumbling down. Well, the bigger they are, then I guess the harder they fall. Sitting on top of his trunk, we feel so small. Well, it's all that's left, and you can bet we'll cry, thinking about the days when we had the shade of the shadow of the pine. Now the snow's been dancing like that lady's cotton gown. Lord, you know it's cold and there ain't much sound. Let me get this fire burning so the light is warm and white. Silhouette of the wood that burns inside. Now we all come around with love and a little bit of wine. We don't got the shade. Shadow of a pine. We don't got the shade, but we got it made in the shadow of a pine. We don't got the shade, but we got it made in the shadow of the pine.
Yeah, was he like a country fan, a country music fan?
Yeah, he liked folk. He liked the it's kind of bluegrass, country stuff, western vibe.
I was going to ask, it's like, do you ask them, like, what kind of music they like? Like,
always.
Oh, that's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah, that way it sounds familiar. You know, like, I'll ask their top three artists and songs, and then I'll really listen to the arrangement, the production, and the melody, and the tone. And then it usually informs a bit of the writing. And then it just kind of feels
crazy. Like, you probably get an eclectic bunch of answers when you ask that question. And it's really funny to see, like, what people really gravitate towards. Like, there's so much fluff, but you really know, oh, these songs speak to them. And
yeah, or they're symbolic for them already, so that kind of tells me a little bit more about who they are,
right?
Like, right. What is their ideal, you know, or like, what's their dream even now? And yeah, it allows me to see them too, you know. It's another way music's just a bridge.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where I'm sure you feel the same way. It's like, we don't really know where music comes from. I once talked to this magician. We did like some conference together, and I was like, man, that was amazing. Like, I just think that is just incredible. Your magic is so incredible. And he's like, no, man. He's like, musicians are the real magicians. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you guys just make songs pop out of thin air. He's like, I'm just teaching you. I'm just showing you illusions. Like, I can show you how I do all these tricks, but he's like, you can't tell me where music comes from. And I'm like, that's true. You know, we don't even know how it kind of comes about, but it is, you know, it is just a gift that comes from somewhere. And
it's a wonderful mystical thing.
It's a it is a wonderful mystical thing, but it's amazing that you're using it to channel
another wonderful mystical thing.
Yeah, another wonderful mystical thing.
They really go so that's well together.
A tremendous amount of pain, you know, but you're turning it into something beautiful. Do you ever find that your subject is almost, it's almost like sometimes you don't want to write about them because of maybe something deep rooted in their regret or their life experience, or maybe something ugly that they don't want to see back, you know, like the reflection. Is there a moment where you feel like the writing, I'm going to kind of write around this to make sure that this is not a pivotal point in the song, you know?
Yeah. There's ways, of course, to write an analogy that can deliver those things really well. You know, it can address, like, I write for those that have lost loved ones due to suicide, and that's a pretty heavy duty, huge elements of guilt and pain and just all these things. But that's the beauty of poetry. I mean, it's the beauty of analogy and music, to where you don't have to completely say it, but you can address it in a way that it can be like the beast in the room, but it turns into something new, and it's part of the story. I mean, that's kind of the beautiful part about reflecting back on a life like this is, you know, it happened.
Right.
Now what, you know, and it's happening now what, and it's, I think therein lies the challenge too, to find the beauty within the worst of it all. And sometimes those moments are, I'd say typically those moments are the most informing and transformative and gripping, because we've got those shadows ourselves, you know. Everyone's got some version of this terrible thing or some regret that we can identify with, and the more vulnerable they are in being completely honest with their legacy and being like, this is part of my story and this is what it taught me, I think that much more we all can learn to be like, whoa, if he can be that honest about that, why am I holding back?
Right. Well, and it's also, there's so much, you know, I was just thinking about this today. Adulting is such a weird experience.
That word.
Like, it all of a sudden makes you're forced to deal with a lot more distractions. You know, when you're a kid, you don't really have that many distractions. It's like you're looking at either a game or a puzzle, or it's like you have homework and then, you know, it's finished. Adulting is like you have a big project that has so many different facets and you have so many different ways to solve the puzzle. But in those moments that you have with these patients, all that subsides. Mm. And all that's left is like this last little bit of glimmer or resolution of creating something or making something in the moment, the last moment, more than likely. So how does that not get to become almost like a distraction, like from your everyday life? Because, you know, you're not clocking into a 9-to-5. That's not your gig. Your gig is this really heavy experience. And then how do you disengage from that? Because, I mean, that's got to be very difficult.
Well, I mean, That's a good question, because I really haven't been able to disengage completely since this has began. You know, it's deep in there, in every like fiber of who I am, because of the nature of it. You know, it's so real that it just becomes a part of you. And I share it all the time. Like, that's, I think, the joy of not disengaging, but like redirecting or like repurposing to where the heaviness can kind of be relieved, because I'm sharing the goodness of it with people. And it's really just sharing these lessons of what it is to be alive. And it just makes me excited, you know, like, it's really brutal stuff, but the beauty in it is so, so exciting. And it just makes sense. I'm a very practical person.
Imogen Heap says there's beauty in the breakdown. And that's what I love. I love those kind of sentiments, because that's it. There's beauty in the breakdown, you know? What do you want to play us last?
I think Be Water is the last one I sent you. Is that right? Be Water?
I believe so. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Tell us a little backstory on this.
Yeah. So this is written for a mother who lost her son. She's through the program that we do through the VA, actually, down in La Jolla, La Jolla, nice. San Diego. And it's really, she's an amazing example of somebody who essentially has suffered the worst thing you can imagine, losing your child.
Wow.
To suicide. I mean, that's insane.
Right.
I mean, that kind of pain is like, I've never witnessed pain like that before.
Yeah.
And so I team up with this therapist down there, and we started this group with her and this other woman who also lost her son, and they never knew each other before our group, but they like had a common theme with their situation. And turns out their sons were like the same height, around the same age. And what's even crazier is they both were like my height and my age and like same eye color and everything. It's pretty trippy. But she, along with this other mother, they were able to find the beauty in the breakdown. If there's any other word for it, it's like they were able to walk through all of the stages of what this grief was and continues to be for them. It's not something that's going to go away. And it's something that they've learned now through the process of what we've explored is something that they can use to help other people. And since then, we've introduced other people into the group that have also lost, and they've become facilitators. And then the new gals that were taught by them become facilitators for other people that come in. So it's like the circle of teaching and giving that brings so much transformation to like the most brutal pain you can imagine. And it gives you perspective. It's given them eyes to see another in a way that they wouldn't have had access to before.
Incredible.
And it doesn't even have to have words. They just know. And
it's a feeling. It's a feeling. You're basically feeling.
Yeah.
Feelings, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And so
let's listen to Be Water, by Ian McCarter.
Until the rain came down.
Man, that was definitely my favorites. Mm. That was intense. That gave me chills like crazy.
I love that one.
Beautiful song, man. Beautiful song. Really intense, man. I almost called you Ian McKellar, and I know I'm not the first person to do that.
I've been called all the mix you can imagine. McCorkle, McClarler.
Well, your name is Ian McCarter, and there's an Ian McKellar who's very famous. And
Ian McKellen, the actor, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So Ian McKellen, that's right. Yeah, so, you know, yeah, that I didn't mean to stumble on that. Okay. I interrupted you right before we played the song, but you had a last little sentiment about this song.
Oh, yeah, it just had to do with the element of like how of that relationship is so fluid, you know, and like that relationship to grief is so... It's so heavy. It's like, you know, it's like the ocean, and it's
right.
But it also has the way of transforming into some kind of nourishment.
That's my bulldog Otis.
Hey,
Otis,
this is getting good.
Hello over here, Otis over here. He's a tripper.
Dog
you're doing a wonderful thing. Well, where can people find you? On Instagram or Facebook or wherever, if they want
anywhere. I'm the only Ian McCartor that I've been able to find online. So if you just, my website's a good place to find articles about the work. I do visual art along these lines that, you know, we won't speak of since it's a music program, but that's an interesting angle too. And that's been really amazing in its own right, just given its context as well. And they can find the albums on Spotify, iTunes, the works, and it's just my name.
Well, Ian, thank you very much for doing the work that you're doing.
It's my honor.
Putting the gifts of music into the best gift of service. And we wish you well. We're going to have you come back 9-10 months later and tell us more stories about this, because this is just therapeutic for me, and I know everybody else that's listening. So thank you for doing what you do. On behalf of Sam, myself, and Ian, we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for tuning in. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and we'll see you on the other side. Thank you, Ian.
My pleasure. My honor to share. Thank you.
We'll talk soon, okay?
Good.
Be good. Bye for now.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.